was tired, and she really, at that point, wanted to know all the town news, and wasn't talking so much about her news as much as our town news. And so there is a tremendous mixture of feelings as you soar to the heights with this success and wonderful accomplishment of somebody you know, and then have to watch it all come to pieces in front of your eyes.
That's Chris Rath, the principal of Roundlett Junior High School in Concord, and she's a friend of Krista McAuliffe. She says, as we heard, that she had even kidded Krista about the danger. Of course, in addition to Krista McAuliffe, the first teacher in space, the crew included Commander Dick Scobie, Pilot Mike Smith, Ron McNair, Greg Jarvis, Ellison Onizuka, and Judy Resnick. Several of those people, veterans of space travel. But of course, at the time when Challenger exploded, all the expertise and all the training and all the skill in the world couldn't have helped them. This was out of their hands. Chris Fraser of CBS radio affiliate WKXL was at Concord High School in New Hampshire this morning to cover the shuttle liftoff.
To say everything is extremely upset right here. They have asked the students to leave the auditorium. There are spent noisemakers littering the floor right now. The children walked out of the auditorium in more or less a state of shock, needless to say. No one knew what happened right when it went up. As Jim said, when the second explosion more or less happened, everyone thought it was just part of the, maybe a booster or something. No one knew. Everyone was cheering as the launch went up. The students were asked to leave. As soon as the explosion was announced, the students were asked to go back to the class, and the media has been asked to clear out. As I said, there are streamers and confetti littering the floor here right now. Everyone is extremely upset. One, as soon as there was noise continuing throughout the launch, everyone was screaming. As soon as that something went wrong, the room became absolutely silent. There was not a word spoken by anyone. The students filed out in absolute silence. Many of them just with shocked, stunned looked at their face. I had asked yesterday and today many of the students if they were at all nervous, aside from being just excited that Krista McAuliffe was going into space, and I didn't have one student tell me that they were worried or concerned. I guess these things have just become so routine that the thought of danger never even enters anyone's mind.
Chris Fraser, a teacher's triumph turned tragedy in a matter of minutes. Christopher Glenn at the Kennedy Space Center has been talking with somebody from Krista McAuliffe's hometown. Chris?
Yes, it's Jim Rivers of WKXL, also the Concord, New Hampshire station, who's been down here to take a look at the launch and has been sharing some of our studio space with us. Jim, any further insight into the way Concord feels about this?
Well, again, Chris, as we mentioned earlier, I've been in contact with the city, and it's desolate. Everyone, we talked to a caller on our talk show this morning, and he said you thought that the town had been evacuated. Everybody was in front of TVs, and so this is an event that people aren't just going to read about in the papers. It's something that everybody saw as it happened. And a lot of us in Concord are rookies, as I said earlier, in seeing this. And as Chris Fraser has indicated, when we saw the ball of fire, we all thought it was part of the whole event. And everybody is just sitting back and praying and hoping that there are seven people out there in the water somewhere. We've had a couple of calls to the studio here in the building in the last few minutes from concerned people. We had a call from a young boy who wanted to talk to someone and asked if the apple had anything to do with it. It just thoughts that are going through people's mind.
A member of the closeout team outside the rocket just before Krista McAuliffe got aboard this morning handed her an apple for the teacher.
Yeah,
yes.
And then this young listener said, oh, did anyone check the apple? So everybody's saying, why? What happened? What went wrong at this point?
Well, as we heard from NASA's George Diller, it may be months, literally, before we get any firm answers to that. He did have an indication, at least he said it appeared that one of the solid rocket boosters on the rocket assembly had a premature separation and thereby unstabilized the dynamic configuration of the rest of the flight. Jim, what do you suppose will happen in Concord as a result of this, looking beyond the immediate astonishment and the stunned nature of the people up there? What what will happen in the weeks ahead in Concord, do you think?
The city of Concord is a strong community. They've been through things like this in the past, and they'll survive and go on living. But I think it's going to be a long period of mourning for Krista McAuliffe and her crewmates, and I'm not sure if we will ever totally recover from this, because, as I say, everybody in the community, bar probably none at the point of liftoff, were watching, were listening, and everybody found out together.
Yes. Yesterday, of course, New Hampshire's young governor, John Sununu, was down here hoping to watch the launch, and then they had a weather delay yesterday, and he had to go back to Concord last night. Is there any word from him yet about this?
He has not made a statement yet. We expect to hear from him soon. I know that our news department have been in touch with his office, and he will be coming out with a statement. A lot of the people in Concord, the school superintendent, Mark Beauvais, the school board president, Mike Dunn, were down here. They have gone home. I talked with Susan Anderson, a team teacher out in Idaho, with Barbara Morgan. Idaho people were down here. They've all gone home to watch it on TV.
Well, it was about an hour and 2 minutes ago that Shuttle Challenger, less than a minute and a half off the launch pad, exploded in flight. The fate of the crew is still officially unknown. How explosion, it was an awful long way down, and the water there is quite deep. They're about 20 miles offshore, so it's going to be a long time before we get any information on what has happened to the crew, but it does not appear too bright for their survival at this point. Judy Muller in New York.
Yes, Chris, CBS News correspondent Ike Pappas in Washington is in the office right now of the congressman who was on the previous shuttle flight, Congressman Nelson. Ike?
Yeah, I'm listening.
What is Congressman Nelson's reaction to this?
Well, Congressman Nelson, Bill Nelson, the Florida Democrat, who only 9 days ago returned to Earth aboard the Challenge, the Columbia, sat in his office watching the liftoff of the next shuttle, Challenger, on a closed-circuit NASA monitor. Congressman Nelson has not emerged from the office as yet, but his press secretary is telling us that when the explosion occurred, there was nothing but silence in the room. Congressman Nelson is the chairman of the Space Science and Technology Subcommittee. He is meeting with the staff of that subcommittee at the moment. His press secretary says that no one said a word in the room. Comments will have to wait, according to Congressman Nelson. Congressman Nelson is quoted as saying, "I need time to get everything together." So he has scheduled a 3 o'clock news conference today when he can possibly shed a little bit more light on what occurred aboard that shuttle. Congressman Nelson, you know, understands the frustrations that must have been felt by the crew members of the Challenger, including Mrs. McAuliffe, because it took, I believe, if my memory serves me, I guess 7 scrubs they went through on Columbia, and then it took them, I guess, 3 or 4 times before they could safely come down aboard Columbia. So he understands what the frustrations were and probably what the perils were in this kind of a mission. So for the moment, I think we have to wait to see what Congressman Nelson discovers and what his reactions to this event are.
Ike, despite the tragedy, that the president reportedly plans to go ahead with his State of the Union message tonight, and Larry Speaks said, "I'm certain the president will feel compelled to mention this, and depending on the outcome." I imagine Senator Jake Garn will be following events today with some interest, too, as he was the first politician to go into space.
Absolutely. I believe that Senator Garn, as a matter of fact, has scheduled a news conference for 15 minutes from now, and will be giving his reactions and telling us perhaps what he knows about and what he has learned from NASA, because these astronauts are tied, in perpetuity to the NASA Control Center for every launch, because they can contribute and they can learn from these launches themselves, even if they have been in space. And I'm sure that Senator Garn is feeling what Senator Nelson is feeling. I'm sorry, Congressman Nelson is feeling, and people who are feeling all over the world who have been close to this space program, and those of us who have covered the space program over the years are feeling a great sense of tragedy and loss at this moment, and there's no question, although Bill Nelson has not articulated that yet, there's no question from the tone, from the mood, from the sense, from the atmosphere in his office that there is a great aura of grief and dismay at this event. And certainly the president is going to... It should be assumed that he will certainly mention this in some form this evening.
Ike Pappas on Capitol Hill. CBS News Pentagon correspondent Chris Kelly is also standing by. Chris, what have you learned there at the Pentagon?
So far, the main recovery effort seems to be underway by the Coast Guard. They have a couple of ships in the area there, along with aircraft availability to see what they can achieve there. At the same time, the Navy says two ships that happened to be in the general vicinity, they weren't there on station, they weren't there on duty, but they were in the general location, are now rushing toward the disaster area. One, we're told, is about 45 minutes away. A hydrofoil, which carries about 21 men. Another ship, a U.S. Guided missile frigate with 200 men, is steaming toward the location, but that ship is a good 2 hours away. So the Navy will go there, assist the Coast Guard in whatever recovery and search efforts they can achieve. In addition to that, a Navy official said that, as best they could tell, there were no Soviet ships in the immediate area. We don't know if the Soviets this time were off the Florida coast, well off the Florida coast, I should say, watching this launch. They have been out there in the past. Whether they were there this time is unknown, but at least we know in this case that there are no Soviet ships in the immediate area of the disaster, and as best the Navy can tell, there were no ships anywhere around because, of course, that area had been cleared prior to the launch. Judy?
Thanks, Chris. I'd like to ask you to stand by for just a moment. We need to go down to the Cape now. Christopher Glenn has been trying to follow developments. Chris?
Yes, Judy. We just had another report from Mission Control while you were talking with Chris Kelly, and it has concluded, and we're going to turn that tape around for you and play that back in just a moment here. Jim Rivers of Station WKXL in Concord, who's been speaking with us, has been down here for the launch and has been speaking with us about the reaction in Concord, has told me a moment ago that students at Concord High School who had been gathered in the auditorium to watch a large screen TV version of the launch and had been cheering and saw this thing happen in front of their eyes have now been dismissed for the day as of 1 o'clock, and they will go home to be with their families. Now we have this tape just within the last 2 minutes or so from Mission Control. Let's hear that.
This is Mission Control, Houston, at 11:48 a.m. Central Standard Time. Recovery teams are searching the impact area off the coast of Launch pad 39B, where earlier this morning on ascent we had an incident approximately 1 minute after ascent, an apparent explosion as the space shuttle had shortly before reached a throttle back position. The range safety teams were unable to get rescue teams, the search and rescue teams, delayed in getting into the area because of debris continuing to fall from very high altitudes for as long, almost as an hour after ascent. Those teams in place now in the search area. Additional information as it becomes available to us. This is Mission Control, Houston.
So again, a rather skimpy report from Mission Control on what they know right at the moment. We're looking at pictures provided by NASA cameras aboard a helicopter, apparently in the search area, about 20 miles offshore, and they do show some yellowish streaks in the water, but no visible wreckage or debris of any kind. I presume that some of those yellow streaks are chemical residue from the main fuel tank or from the orbiter's fuel tanks itself. One very poignant shot that they had was looking back over the water toward the land, and in the very distant horizon you can see the very noticeable beacon and profile of the vehicle assembly building where they put these things together in a vertical configuration and then roll them out to the launch pad. But as of now, we know very little else about the fate of the crew members, except it's probable that none of them survived this this tragedy today. And we do have some word from NASA spokesman Jim Mizell, which has been gathered on tape, and we'd like to play that tape for you now.
Everything looked perfectly normal, and it looked like in about 1 minute into the flight, and at that point it appeared to have a disintegration of a part of the shuttle system. At that time we could not tell whether it was a solid rocket booster or the main orbiter or anything else. My first impression was that we were getting ready to have a perform a return to landing site, because something occurring at that point is normally what would have occurred. In a few moments it became obvious that, that we could see nothing coming out of the explosion that was headed back toward Kennedy Space Center, so it became obvious that the pieces were going to fall in the ocean. And from that point on, that's about all the data that we had. We did hear that there was some impact of some of the orbiter somewhere 20 miles downrange, and the Air Force has dispatched helicopters to the site, and we have no report as to what they have found, or we have had no report on the cause of the apparent explosion.
Jim, was there any indication at all that the shuttle was in distress at any point?
From what we have heard from Mission Control and from the engineering people at this time, there was no indication as to what occurred. There was a statement that there was an explosion, and really that statement was not very clear as to exactly where did the explosion take place and why. So I think they're going to be evaluating data for quite some time before they release any information, and certainly they're going to have to hear from those people in the rescue area before there's any can be any speculation as to the status of the crew or the orbiter.
Jim, tell us about that rescue operation. Tell us where the paramedics were flown in from, and tell us about the operation.
Well, as you're well aware, we launch into a section of the ocean that is controlled by Central Control for the Air Force. It's the Easton Test Range, and this is all controlled by Patrick Air Force Base, and they have a range safety control at Cape Canaveral. We had a helicopter force on standby that normally patrols this area doing missions or doing shuttle launches, and those same helicopters were available and were in patrol at that time. And this is not something we do for this mission, but we do it for every mission. So the Air Force really handles all of our search and rescue as far as any contingency or emergency operations are concerned. And that plan was put into effect immediately as soon as it became apparent that something was wrong. And at the present time, we have not heard from them on anything decisive as to what they found or what they're seeing at that point out there.
Have there been any indications at all from the rescue team?
There has not been any indication at this time, to my knowledge. I suspect they are setting up a team to evaluate what's going on, and they're probably much in closer touch with the rescue team than we are here.
That's spokesman Jim Mizell. Thank you. And that tape provided by Frank Motek of our Miami affiliate WINZ. And Frank, you're in the studio with me now. Did you find out anything else over there at the press center?
At the moment, they're still trying to learn as much as they can from the rescue team that has been dispatched to the area. The faces still tell the story of shock and disbelief. At this point, everyone is waiting to get more information from that team that's been sent out there.
A couple of other things I think we ought to mention at this point. This launch of Challenger this morning was from a new shuttle launch pad a couple of miles due north of the one that they've used for all of the previous shuttle launches. Everything there had checked out perfectly, and of course, since the explosion occurred a minute and 15 or 12 seconds into the flight, that didn't really seem to have anything to do with it. The new launch pad was supposed to give NASA much greater flexibility for this year's crowded launch schedule. schedule, but of course at this point it doesn't appear that they will have a crowded launch schedule at any rate. There also had been a number of days of delays of this launch as NASA, exercising its customary caution, would not fly when it was raining. They would not fly when the crosswinds on the ground were blowing too hard. That was yesterday. There was a brief holdup for an hour this morning before launch while they waited for ice to clear off of the shuttle vehicle, and of course none of those factors seemed to enter into it either. Judy Muller in New York.
To recap once again, the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded about 2 minutes after liftoff from Cape Canaveral and plunged into the Atlantic some 60 miles away. The fate of the seven-member crew, including teacher Krista McAuliffe, is unknown, but it's unlikely that any of the astronauts have survived. We do not know that for sure. It appeared the rocket booster may have separated prematurely and exploded, but that is not known for sure. In fact, nothing is known for sure. In the words of NASA spokesman George Diller, it just happened. In addition to McAuliffe, a teacher from Concord, New Hampshire, the crew includes Commander Dick Scobie, Pilot Mike Smith, Ron McNair, Grave Jarvis, Ellison Onizuka, and Judy Resnick. The Senate has scheduled a prayer session for this afternoon. The White House says President Reagan watched in silence a replay of the accident. The president was described as saddened and anxious to have more information, as the nation is saddened, in shock, and we fear a nation in mourning. This has been a CBS News special report. I'm Judy Muller, CBS News.
And I'm Harvey Hobbit with Rita Sands. We have some local reaction to the tragedy. Here's Fred Fishkin.
Well, Harvey, rows of television sets brought the unbelievable news to the people who crowded around them in stores throughout the metropolitan area. At the Crazy Eddie store on 45th Street in Manhattan, some could hardly bear to watch as the replays of the terrible explosion high above Cape Canaveral were shown again.
I'm watching it now for the first time on the TVs here. This is a replay of oh my God.
And there is the second explosion. Did you see they shared the wall?
There's just nothing left.
32-year-old Mike Buxbaum of Manhattan, who says he, like so many others, grew up with a keen interest in the space program. And Fred Fishkin, WCBS News.
Sorry, Fred, we should point out that one of those aboard the shuttle, 41-year-old Gregory Jarvis, is from Rockland County. He's from Spring Valley. He's one of the technicians aboard. I'm Harvey Hoppin with Rita Sands. WCBS News time is 1 o'clock.
CBS News, I'm Dick Reeves.
There was a bright flash, and we could see flame going off in three directions, and then nothing.
A horrified eyewitness to the space tragedy at Cape Canaveral, the shuttle Challenger exploding in the skies over the Atlantic about a minute after liftoff, apparently killing all seven people on board, including New Hampshire high school teacher Krista McAuliffe. Christopher Glenn is at the Cape. He was a witness to the disaster. Chris, do we know much more now than we did when the spacecraft blew up?
No, we don't, Dick. At this point, it's still rather inconclusive as to exactly what happened. One of the NASA spokesmen speculated to us a little while ago that it appeared as if one of the solid rocket boosters, there are two of them on every rocket configuration for the shuttle that goes up, it appeared that one of them had separated from the rocket assembly prematurely and gone its own separate way, and that, of course, caused the rest of the spacecraft and the rockets to run amok in the sky and eventually for that assembly to fall into the ocean. It's not known at this time whether by some miracle the shuttle Challenger, the orbiter itself, was intact after the explosion and was somehow able to separate from the main fuel tank and the other solid rocket booster and somehow perform an aerodynamic glide down in and ditch at sea. We're looking at pictures from NASA cameras over the crash site in the Atlantic right now, and all they show there is a few yellowish streaks in the water. Appears to be some kind of chemical debris from the crash itself, perhaps spent fuel or something like that, but no sign of any large chunks of wreckage and certainly no sign of the orbiter.
Well, were there efforts, obviously, to get the rescue people there, but it took some time, did it not?
Yes, they had some people nearby, but from the altitude at which the spacecraft was traveling when the explosion occurred, it would take the debris, all of it, some 15 minutes to fall into the sea. That was how high up in the air they were. So they were prevented from entering the actual crash site until perhaps 15 or 20 minutes after the explosion and after they had scrambled scramble to get underway to get out there. They just had to hang back and wait to go in until everything had finished falling from above them, which possibly could have hit them and compounded this tragedy.
And of course, it seems so long, so agonizingly long since it happened, that those of us who are waiting and hoping wonder what's going to happen now, what will happen now.
Now NASA has impounded all of the telemetry, all of the data, and all of the voice tapes from the flight, and they will be analyzing them very carefully over the next days, over the next weeks, over the next months, and it may be a very long time indeed before we get any official version of what happened here today. What was immediately apparent, as you said, was what we could see with our eyes. This rocket, which appeared to be going so well, without warning even to the eye or to instruments of any kind, just blew apart in the air.
Does NASA plan any kind of an announcement, or is that sort of a constant process at this time?
At this point, we're getting intermittent reports from Mission Control, Dick, but they're not really adding too terribly much new information each time. There's no broad revelation at all other than what we already know.
Chris Glenn reporting from the Cape. Gene Craven was watching the launch from the third floor roof of the University of Florida, 150 miles away.
I knew that something was seriously wrong, having seen several liftoffs before, because on a clear day we would have been able to watch the flame of the booster for much longer. So we just saw the explosion and then flame going in three directions and then nothing but the smoke from the exhaust.
In Washington, President Reagan was quickly told of the terrible event. Gary Schuster reports from the White House.
White House spokesman Larry Speakes said President Reagan was informed of the accident at a meeting with aides in the Oval Office. He immediately went to his adjoining study and watched television reruns of the liftoff and the explosion.
The president was stood there in almost stunned silence as he watched the television. You could certainly read the concern, the sorrow, the anxiety on his face as he watched.
Speakes said he didn't believe the accident would deter the American space exploration program. The presidential spokesman also said he didn't expect the accident to affect Mr. Reagan's State of the Union address tonight, except that the president would certainly make reference to the accident. Gary Schuster, CBS News, the White House.
A friend of Krista McAuliffe, New Hampshire school, high school principal Chris Rath, said amid all the excitement and preparation for the mission, no one gave much thought to the potential dangers.
There's been a great deal of activity focused on the shuttle. We built an ice cream shuttle, and the kids built an ice sculpture shuttle, and we know the ins and outs of a shuttle, and throughout all of that, no one thought about that, I don't think, in terms of it is a dangerous expedition. It's still a frontier, and we haven't mastered it, and we saw that today.
Recapping the story, the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded about 1 minute after liftoff from Cape Canaveral and plunged into the Atlantic Ocean some 60 miles from the launch pad. The fate of the seven-member crew, including teacher Krista McAuliffe, is unknown, but it's unlikely that any of those on board the Shuttle Challenger could have survived. I'm Dick Reeves, CBS News.
And you're keeping up to the minute on the space shuttle tragedy on WCBS in New York. WCBS News time is 1:06.
Now, direct from CBS News, this radio net alert bulletin.
This is Mitchell Krause in New York. Stunned disbelief, tragedy, disaster. Cape Canaveral, the flight of the Space Shuttle Challenger. Moments after liftoff today, as you may have heard, it exploded in a giant fireball, apparently killing all the seven crew members aboard. Although there is no definite word on the fate of the crew, rescuers are at the scene. It was difficult to reach the scene, for debris fell for some 45 minutes after the explosion in space. Christopher Glenn is at the Cape. We'll be talking with him in moments on the status of the rescue effort now underway. Of course, the President and all members of the Congress and the Space Agency, the United States government, and I'm sure the people of the United States were shocked and saddened by this disaster at the Cape. The first time in flight in 56 United States manned space missions that there was a disaster and there was death. And ironically, just the other day was the 19th anniversary of the disaster on the ground that killed several astronauts. But that was the first time we had a disaster, and never in the air had a space shuttle encountered this difficulty. Christa McAuliffe was, of course, aboard that flight, the first citizen in space, the first teacher in space, and she was thrilled when she accepted her choice as the first private citizen to fly on the shuttle. From her White House speech.
It's not often that a teacher is at a loss for words. I know my students wouldn't think so. I've made 9 wonderful friends over the last 2 weeks. And when that shuttle goes, they might be one body. But there's going to be 10 souls that I'm taking with me. Thank you.
That's great.
The parents of the New Hampshire teacher, of course, were on the scene at the Cape when the disaster occurred. They stared in utter disbelief as they watched the shuttle explode. There was cheering before the explosion, there was happiness, and then, oh my God, oh no, said one. And with looks of shock, the Corrigans, Edward and Grace Corrigan of Framingham, Massachusetts, the parents of Christa McAuliffe, were taken to another room by NASA officials. Christopher Glenn is at the Cape, and Chris, what's the latest that you have?
In the last few minutes, Mitchell, very little from NASA itself. They have put a few additional details on the story, but nothing major other than what is already speculated, which is that perhaps one of the two solid rocket boosters that help propel the spacecraft toward its orbit and then are designed to fall away at a certain point in the launch sequence, separated from the main rocket assembly prematurely and therefore caused the rest of it to go haywire, and of course it's uncontrollable with that mighty thrust coming out of all those rocket engines, and it was very quickly over. Still unknown is whether the orbiter itself somehow survived the explosion, and somehow, it would have to have been a miracle, managed to make an aerodynamic glide back into the ocean and ditch there, as planes can do. They can ditch in the ocean, but this was from a tremendous height, and it happened all at once without any advance warning, and it's not even clear whether the ground teams or the computers on the ground were able to get the rest of the rocket separated from the orbiter itself so that it would be possible for Commander Francis Scobie to have made a maneuver like that and tried to ditch at sea. At any rate, the rescue teams that are out in the impact area now, about 60 miles offshore, we're seeing some NASA cameras showing us pictures of the surface of the water, showing no visible chunks of debris, but showing some chemical smears on the surface of the water, and that's about all we know right at the moment. I do have with me once again, Mitchell, James Rivers of WKXL in Concord, New Hampshire, and Jim, of course, has been on the phone up there with them constantly since this tragedy occurred. And Jim, what can you add to the story from Concord now?
Actually, Chris, there are two points coming out of the city of Concord right now. High school principal Charles Foley closed off Concord High School to the media moments after it had happened, and his faculty and staff are meeting to offer counseling to the student body or to any members of the faculty that feel that they need counseling to help them get through this day. Our reporters from CBS affiliate WKXL in Concord on the street are finding that the people of Concord really don't want to talk about it. The mood on Main Street and in the stores, where very little activity is going on right now, people are walking around with their heads bowed and really, as you might understand, not wanting to talk to reporters and just sitting back and waiting.
You told us earlier, didn't you, that this was a day of great celebration at Concord High School, that the student body and the faculty had gathered in the auditorium in front of a large screen TV and were celebrating the apparently successful launch in its first minute. What happened when they realized that something was going wrong up there?
Dead silence in talking with members of the faculty at Concord High School. Harvey Smith, whose classroom is wired by NASA and was going to originate the question and answer series with Christa McAuliffe on Friday now, was in the auditorium, and I have spoken with him, and he said it was just all of a sudden as if you turned the volume switch on something off. It was silence altogether all at once, and then Mr. Foley addressed the student body, and they filed out very quietly, leaving behind all of their paraphernalia.
Krista McAuliffe, of course, had planned to teach two brief lessons from space to a nationwide radio and television hookup to schools around the country, which was to have been provided by the Public Broadcasting Service. The first of those was to have been a sort of the grand tour of the space shuttle. The ultimate field trip was, I think, what she had entitled her lesson plan. And the second was where we are, where we're going, why we're in space, that kind of thing. And she had said long before the flight that what she really wanted to do, the real reason that she wanted to go into space, was to demystify NASA and spaceflight. She wanted to show ordinary people and generations of young Americans that there was a place for them in space and a reason that they should be going there. And I think her words are ironic and especially tragic today, given the scope of this disaster, which we have seen before. Again, Jim, you mentioned, and I wonder if you could tell us once more about the plans for special counseling for the kids at Concord High, if any of them have psychological difficulty with the tragedy.
Well, Chris, this had, as I had indicated earlier, there had been a tragedy at the high school earlier with a young student who had been involved in a shooting that many of the students witnessed, and it required counseling, and Charles Foley, the principal at Concord High, had gotten together his staff, and many students did go to the counseling. Now, on a much grander scale, with most all of the student body in the auditorium viewing this, I guess there is going to be a need for some counseling. It will be offered through the school. The school has been dismissed as of 1 o'clock this afternoon for the student body to go home and be with their loved ones and be with their families. But once the school bells ring again in Concord, there are going to be some students who will want to just talk it out. And the question again is why this all happened. Even Kristen herself said, I want to prove that it's a safe place to be, that it's just as safe as walking across the street.
Let me interrupt you, Chris, for a moment, and Jim Rivers. We have Jake Garn, the senator from Utah, who flew in space and was aboard one of the shuttles, and we'll go now to Washington for that.
Well, it's very difficult for me to talk about it because these were my friends. Mike Smith, the pilot, was my mother hen the first month that I trained. They assigned him to me, go to my classes and help brief me. And I don't know of any time that I have been more shocked or more moved than when my first wife was killed in an automobile accident. And so it's been very, very difficult for me this morning.
What does this do to the space program here and its support on the Hill, Senator?
Well, I have great confidence in the space program. I think it's a remarkable system. And I think we should push ahead after we have determined the cause. Obviously, we should not fly until we have determined the cause of this particular failure. But I think we need to look at all of the successes, the remarkable safety record that the space program has had, the benefits that come from it, and the crew members that I knew so well. I would expect that they would want us to go ahead with the space program after we have gone through the proper investigations and analysis and know what happened.
How should we go about investigating this?
Well, obviously, you have to gather all of the data. It has been impounded at this point. There'll have to be a lot of studies, but there are some superbly qualified experts in this area that I think will be able to determine what the failure was.
Senator, you were on board the space shuttle. You felt that tremendous boost that you got. Now, from the telemetry that we heard, the voice data that we heard, they had just told the pilot to go to full throttle, and he had said he was throttling up. What happens at that moment?
You have a combination of the solid rocket booster power and liquid hydrogen and oxygen in the main tank. And because most of your thrust comes from the solid rocket boosters, while you're still in the atmosphere, you can exceed the maximum dynamic pressure. So the main engines are only at about 60% of power until you get further out of the atmosphere. And they had just been given the command to throttle up. And then you go to 104% or maximum power on the solids or on the liquids. And so that is exactly what had taken place. They were high enough so they would not endanger the orbiter from too much pressure and were given that order that they could proceed to increase the power.
What are some of the things that can go wrong at that moment?
Well, you have a very large external tank of very volatile liquid hydrogen and oxygen, and you're just simply, it's like in an automobile, you are putting more fuel. You're pushing down on the accelerator, you're putting more fuel to bring more power. And of course, at this point, we don't know whether it was one of the solids, we don't know whether it was the liquid engines or not. There's just no way to know at this point.
So, what was your non-trained astronaut
missions that NASA had scheduled for this year? Do you think that they were capable of going ahead with 14 or 15 safely?
Yes, I think so. The major problem these last couple of missions has been weather, and that is something that NASA cannot control. But yes, I think the program was mature enough that. And with the opening of the second pad, Pad B, which Challenger was launched from this morning, with two pads and also the addition of the fourth orbiter, yes, I think they were capable of that schedule.
Do you think it's going to make any difference to civilians in space from now on?
Well, I can't judge what decisions NASA will make, but my own opinion, again, after the investigations, we should proceed with the program, and that would include the civilians in space program as well.
As a civilian yourself going in, were you adequately warned that something like this could happen?
Oh, of course. The training is very thorough and very adequate. In my own case, having flown more than 10,000 hours, I was certainly aware that there are dangers in flying. However, I still feel very strongly that I'm much safer in flying an aircraft than any day that I'm on the Capitol Beltway, and I don't mean that to be facetious at all. We kill nearly 50,000 people a year on the in the highways of this country, because of half of them because of drunk driving. I wish we'd pay a lot more attention to that.
Senator, should there have been some way for them, or was there any way for them to get out at this point? Should there have been?
No, I don't think so. In Columbia, originally during the test phase, when just they were sending two test pilots up, they did have an escape capsule. The program had been approved safe enough, in my opinion, that they didn't need them in the other orbiters, and Columbia had been modified so that it did not have the escape mechanism in it. This is purely my opinion, but in watching what happened this morning, I would doubt very much, even if you had had an escape capsule on board or parachutes, that it would have been possible to get out with that kind of an explosion in any event.
Senator, in light of all of the delays surrounding recent shuttles and this one, do you think that NASA may have been too anxious to get this one off the ground?
No, I was down on Saturday and for the launch on Sunday morning. And they were criticized on Sunday for being overly careful. Safety has always been foremost in their minds. And we woke up on Sunday morning after having canceled at 10 o'clock the night before to a perfect morning. It was beautiful, sunny, clear blue skies, perfect launch, and there was a lot of talk that rather irritated me. Well, NASA was overly cautious. And so, no, I don't think that's true at all.
What happens in your subcommittee now in terms of funding for the program?
Well, I can't answer that question exactly because of Graham Rudman and the other budget constraints, but I certainly have no intentions other than to push on, and that does not change the intent or the progress of the program.
How do you think the investigation ought to be handled, Senator? Should there be some sort of blue ribbon panel put together, or should NASA be allowed to handle it?
Well, I think NASA has the technical experts, and if they need more than in-house, they will pull them in. I don't think we need to go outside that other than to draw on consultants if necessary. NASA is so thorough and so careful. If any of you had experienced how they go through the redundancy and the backups and careful nature, the dedication of these scientists and engineers in NASA, I have full faith in them. They want the program to succeed. They want to take care of their astronauts. It's always a real team effort. They work closely together, and they will want to find out what happened more than anybody else.
Senator, how lucky did you feel today that you returned safely?
Well, I don't feel particularly lucky. I think the program is reliable. In all programs, in flight test programs for aircraft, we have accidents. And it's a surprise to me that it happened, but I would go again tomorrow. If NASA would let me go, I would go again.
What effect is this likely to have on the community of astronauts?
Well, first of all, they're all such a close-knit group. They're not looking any beyond today except the sorrow of losing some of their companions. You go through each one. I knew Kristen McAuliffe the least of them because she wasn't there. Greg Jarvis, I trained with. Dick Scobie, I knew. Mike Smith was my mother hen. And you go, Onizuka flew in January last year when I was flying. So it's, and where they live together all the time, they train together, they fly together, there's obviously utter shock and disbelief down at Houston today among the astronaut corps.
Live coverage of the aftermath of the tragedy at Cape Canaveral, the destruction in flight, the explosion that destroyed the Challenger and probably destroyed the crew of seven as well. We're bringing you live continuing coverage on the CBS radio network. Now we're going to the White House and Gary Shuster.
Yes, the president has just spoken with some reporters here in the Roosevelt Room. He came in to drop by a lunch that was being attended by network correspondents in preparation, getting some background information on the president's State of the Union address tonight. The president was asked several questions, and I'll give you just some of the responses he had. He said, "I don't think any of the astronauts who were in that program were anything other than volunteers. They volunteered for the program. They were aware of the risks." But he also pointed out, of course, that the program has had a 100% safety record up until now. He was also asked if there might not be some public backlash because of this accident against the program, and he said, "I don't think so." He said, "I will do all I can to counter any such development." And he also said that before any other Challengers or any other space programs get off the ground, that there will have to be a complete investigation of this and a resolution as to what happened before any of the others go up. He said he still has confidence in the program and those who administer it, and that is NASA, which is a civilian operation. The president also was asked about Kristen McAuliffe, the teacher who was on board, who the president greeted here in the Rose Garden several months ago as the teacher who was selected to go up in space. And he said, "I can't get out of my mind her husband, her children, and as well as the others who are on board," he said, "but especially Kristen McAuliffe." He was asked what reaction he had to children because of Mrs. McAuliffe's presence on this flight and the fact that she was supposed to do some teaching in outer space, and programs had been done where children were doing a number of projects related to this. The president was asked, what do you tell the children who see this, who will hear about it? And he said, "I guess what you have to tell them is that life must go on." He was also told that, of course, that his speech tonight, the State of the Union address, is supposed to be upbeat, was supposed to be an uplifting speech, a vision for the nation for 1986. And doesn't this accident cast a pall on it? And he said, "I'm sure it does," but he said, "you can't stop governing a nation because of a tragedy." Basically, the president was quite expansive on this, did a lot of talking about it, but again, his aides say that he knows not much more than what is going on and coming to him from the news media at this point. He has had no official reports.
Gary, let me break in here briefly. Yes. I suppose that the initial reaction that people might have is one of surprise that the president would indeed go ahead with the State of the Union message tonight. You indicated that he said that government must go forward. Would there be any precedent in your knowledge for him postponing it or delaying it for another time?
Well, I don't know if there would be precedent in it. I suspect that it would be, although I can't go back in history that far to tell you if there has been a postponement of a State of the Union address. But the mood here is now that, yes, this is a tragedy, and it would be looked at and be investigated. But at this point, the staff, including White House spokesman Larry Speaks, who told us earlier that the president will go on with his address, will probably make some mention of the accident, perhaps in detail as much as he knows, and perhaps bring the nation up to date on it. But it might almost be a forum for him to do that, and it, for that reason alone, he might give the State of the Union.
Okay, Gary Shuster, you might be interested in hearing that the Soviet news agency TASS has issued a one-sentence report on the explosion. It was simply Dateline New York, and it said the U.S. Space Shuttle Challenger exploded shortly after takeoff. The Soviet Union is the only other nation that sent manned vehicles into space. It reported the deaths of four Soviet cosmonauts in the past, but so far, no further reaction from the Kremlin. Now, Christopher Glenn, in the case... explosion that destroyed the Space Shuttle Challenger moments after liftoff. Chris?
Yes, Mitchell. NASA's George Diller is back with us once again, and he has some new information about the kind of rescue effort that's being mounted out there in the Atlantic. George?
This is a joint effort between NASA and the Department of Defense Management Office for Space Shuttle Support, and also the Coast Guard. A number of Coast Guard C-130s have flown from the Coast Guard Air Station at St. Petersburg, Florida. Another Coast Guard aircraft is coming up from Grand Bahama. They are now on the scene. One of the solid rocket booster retrieval ships that belongs to NASA was in that area at the time the mishap occurred. That one is there. A Coast Guard hydrofoil is now there. We also have a Coast Guard cutter coming up from Grand Bahama Island. So at this point, we're moving to the area, but so far not much has been found.
I thought I saw on the NASA cameras out there in aircraft at the impact site some chemical residue on the water. Was that correct, or have they spotted anything at all yet?
They have spotted debris. We don't know if it's solid rocket booster debris or orbiter debris, and we're still not giving up hope that the orbiter might be found intact. You know, what condition the orbiter is in is going to depend on a lot of what the explosion was.
Chris, could I break in and ask a question from New York? For those who have seen the pictures on television of the explosion, there appeared to be one large piece of something that went off by itself, and I suppose some people might think, was that the shuttle itself, or was that a fuel booster?
We haven't looked at that tape closely enough to be able to tell whether or not it was the external tank or one of the solid rocket boosters. The one thing that we did see appeared to be a forward piece of a solid rocket booster that contains parachutes that was floating down toward the water. But exactly what it was that had a trajectory off to the right of the spacecraft is not real clear, if that was the tank or one of the solid rocket boosters.
Now, George, we've been saying since the very beginning of our coverage of this tragedy that there was an explosion of some kind up there. The way I understand it, however, a solid rocket booster can't explode. It's a steady burn, sort of, and an explosion would seem to indicate that the external tank or some kind of a volatile liquid propellant was involved there.
Not necessarily. In a solid rocket booster, when the composition of the solid propellant is poured, it must be poured in a very even fashion. And before the segments are shipped to the Cape, the grain of the propellant is inspected to make sure that it is consistent. If it is not consistent, it will burn hot. It will develop hot spots while it burns. If you have a hot spot that is significant, it can conceivably burn through the casing of the solid rocket booster and cause an explosion. So that will be looked at. We know this can happen because when we had a Delta flight for the European Space Agency with the operational technology satellite that they were flying, we had exactly that happen. There was a hot spot in the booster. It burned through the casing and caused the rest of the vehicle to explode. So we can't rule out that that the solid is the culprit, but we don't know. We don't know how you know, that the main engines may not also be involved.
One more question from this end. The fact that this vehicle was fueled up and ready to go and then had to be postponed, is there any possibility or any view that the kind of thing that goes into these delays could set up a situation that could endanger the spacecraft?
Well, I guess all our procedures will be looked at. I guess the unknown here, there are two unknowns that normally would not be suspect in this case, and that is the fact that this is the first flight from Pad B for the space shuttle, and also this is the first time that we have attempted a launch in sub-freezing weather. Now, we have no indications that either is responsible. The ground support equipment, you know, is not responsible for anything that happens in flight, but could it have contributed to a system malfunctioning in flight? So by impounding the data, which we have done, it will be part of the evaluation as to whether or not any ground support equipment at Pad B might be suspect, whether or not the cold weather procedures might be suspect, or a procedure that we would normally use in any event might be suspect. That will all be looked at in addition to what we gather from the flight systems data.
One other question from here, and that is that given the pressure of public opinion and the coverage and the expectation, if it had to be done all over again, is it possible that without this heavy schedule that NASA might have delayed this liftoff until they had even better conditions and more established conditions to go with?
Well, I think we need to keep in mind that we've frequently been criticized for being too conservative, that we weren't moving out of our research and development posture fast enough. And I think this indicates that all of these procedures that we had that have been very slow and deliberate in trying to ensure against what might even be considered an inconsequential risk may have been necessary. And all we can do is to watch to see what may be the result. It may not be something that we would have had any control over or something totally unforeseeable.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you. We're coming back to New York now. We have overseas reaction to today's tragedy, and we'll be bringing you that shortly. As we mentioned, the Soviet news agency TASS, in a one-sentence report, simply indicated that it had received word from New York that the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded moments after liftoff. It appears, and we've just heard from the Cape, that there are no survivors, although, of course, there is a rescue operation going on as extensively as possible under the circumstances to see if anyone conceivably could have survived that disaster. And now we're going to see whether we can get further background information on what may have caused today's tragedy. Paul Kelter is a NASA aerospace engineer. He happened to be in Las Vegas today where he was talking to people about the space shuttle program, and he was interviewed by CBS radio affiliate KNUU in Las Vegas, asked for his unofficial explanation.
I have a pretty good idea based on seeing the launch go up what happened. Apparently, the external tank, which is a very thin-skinned, 16-story high aluminum tank, which contains liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen fuel, spontaneously exploded. And that's almost 1 million pounds of fuel. The solid rocket boosters, which contain solid fuel, apparently did not explode at that time. The orbiter, which contains the astronauts and experiments and so forth, presumably exploded along with as a result of the explosion of the external tank.
Before the launch this morning, there were some reports that ice and icicles were hanging from the Challenger. What kind of impact do you think that may have had?
If there were icicles hanging from the shuttle, then or just layers of ice on the shuttle at some point or any of the components of it, that could have changed the distribution of weight within the shuttle. But I don't know if that's actually, if there was actually any ice on board. Shifting the weight in the shuttle could, I don't know if that could have caused such an accident. But certainly that is a serious problem when ice is on board the shuttle. We can't launch the shuttle really with a lot of ice or into a rainstorm.
How will this tragedy affect the space program?
I would suspect that this tragedy would force manned mission, the missions that we have with the shuttle, certainly to be put back by several months, because now we need to investigate exactly why what happened.
NASA aerospace engineer Paul Kelter. He was interviewed this morning in Las Vegas by Luke Michaels of CBS radio affiliate KNUU. Now we're going to go overseas to get reaction from abroad to the tragedy at the Cape. Richard Roth is standing by in Rome. And Richard, a city that has seen such terrible tragedy in the recent airport massacre, what's the impact there of this tragedy at the Cape?
Mitchell, it was nightfall in Rome and across Europe when the explosion occurred. Radio and television here in Rome, normal programs were interrupted, and within an hour of the explosion, Italian television was broadcasting pictures from the scene of the launch site, from mission control, and from in the air where the ship exploded. All the adjectives were used that we've heard before, all of them inadequate, incredible, unbelievable, and tragic. The Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Andrea Lorenzoni, who was one of three candidates for the Italian-American tethered satellite shuttle planned for 1988, was interviewed, he said that the explosion was incredible also from the technical point of view, because he said that the security systems of NASA are so very high. He also said he was very sad from a human point of view, because he had worked with Judith Resnick in Houston during his training there. Europe, as you know, has a fascination with America, and a good part of that fascination is with American technology, a technology that many people in Europe have always said can accomplish the impossible. And tonight, I'm sure many here are wondering about that.
Richard, thank you. We'll be talking with you later on. I just wanted to ask you one more question before you get off the line. I did mention the airport massacre, and someone here remarked that how ironic life was that so many people die in so many tragedies and aircraft accidents, and of course this happens at Cape Canaveral, and the eyes of the world are focused on it in astounded shock and horror, and I'm sure that perhaps from our side of the Atlantic we didn't fully comprehend the shock and horror that all of you felt at the tragedy in Rome recently.
All of these tragedies shock all of us.
Richard Roth in Rome. Ronnie Hess is in Paris, and I wonder if we can talk with her now. Ronnie, the reaction in the French capital.
Well, I think that most people are stunned and shocked. There have been special reports on radio and television. There has been a great deal of reaction. The Minister of Research and Technology using the same kinds of words that perhaps are being heard in the United States. This is a black day for all of us, not just the Americans, but everyone. And he has said, we think of all of our American friends and their families, not just the astronauts, but all of NASA's technical staff. He is sure that America will come back. He does not think this will hold back the U.S. space program. And frankly, he said it's a miracle that there have not been worse accidents considering the number of manned space flights.
Ronnie Hess in Paris. The French space program, of course, has been in a European consortium, and I know that there have been some problems with some of the delays that they have had in the French program, but there is no manned French program as yet. Do the French show a great deal of interest in the American space program?
I think they show an extraordinary interest in the American program. Obviously, they have learned a great deal. The competition that has often been spoken of on both sides of the Atlantic is certainly not in many people's minds tonight, although analysts say that it is possible that there will be a setback for the U.S. space program. It may have an effect on the schedule of satellite launches. However, as far as Hermes is concerned, there is the possibility that this accident will teach the French and the Europeans much in terms of making sure that all safety measures are as many as possible are taken into consideration when the French get further along and when the Europeans go further along in manned space flight.
Thank you, Ronnie Hess in Paris. We've heard from two European capitals now the reaction to the disaster at Cape Canaveral today. In case you have just joined us, this is continuing CBS Radio Network coverage of the disaster that destroyed the Space Shuttle Challenger moments after liftoff today, and apparently all seven crew members, including the schoolteacher Krista McAuliffe and the rest of that crew, Francis Scobie, the commander, Michael Smith, Ronald McNair, Ellison Onizuka, Gregory Jarvis, and the space teacher, along with Judith Resnick, all were aboard that craft, and the outlook for the rescue is very bleak. For those who may have seen television pictures of the explosion, the possibilities of picturing anyone escaping from that Holocaust were extremely dim. David Martin is standing by at the Pentagon. He has an update on what's going on in the center of the defense establishment, the Pentagon being involved to some degree in the hopes and the future of the space program. David Martin.
The recovery operation is being run by the Coast Guard, which had two cutters in the area at the time. There were no U.S. Navy ships in the immediate area. You have the two Coast Guard cutters, a third cutter that is close to the area, all three of them converging on the site of where this debris has rained down. There is a report, and we cannot confirm it from here yet, that the actual recovery operation was delayed somewhat to stay out of the area while all this debris rained down. There are two Navy ships en route to the area. One's about 45 minutes away. The other is about 2 hours away. They, I don't think, will be any use in the immediate search for any possible survivors, but I think there will be a wide search of the area trying to recover all possible debris in an attempt to figure out what happened here.
Of course, we mentioned earlier the possible Pentagon involvement in the future of the space program, and David, how might that be affected by this tragedy?
Although the Air Force was going to become one of the prime users of the space shuttle because they were going to use it originally as the sole means for putting all U.S. military satellites into space, but because of so many difficulties that had occurred on earlier flights, the Air Force had insisted on retaining the capability to launch some high-priority satellites with its own rockets. Now, of course, that we have lost, apparently, one entire shuttle, which, if you think about it for a moment, is the equivalent of the Air Force in one brief moment losing a quarter of all its airplanes. It's a major catastrophe, just not only in terms of the lives involved here, but in terms of the equipment. And now that that is lost, it is going to throw this program of cooperation between the military and the civilian NASA agency into great disarray, I would think.
An interview with correspondent David Martin. We recorded that a few moments ago at the Pentagon. President Reagan is at the White House. He had been preparing for the State of the Union address this evening, and there was a considerable schedule for the day of preparation and exposure to the press, and he had been planning and indeed did meet with a group of network correspondents to give them a preview of the address, which was to have been shorter and more visionary than previous addresses. This was his fifth. And at the meeting, the president told the reporters that it was a very traumatic experience this morning, but the program would go forward. And now, astronaut John Glenn, the first man on the moon, is in Washington at a news conference.
The people that were on the flight today carried our hopes and dreams along with them, and they'll live forever in our memories. And I guess that's the best tribute we can give to them. Our prayers, our sympathy, our condolences go out to their families and friends. And I guess that's about all we can say about them right at this time. It's been an amazing success story up to this very tragic accident today. I think this was about the 56th or 57th manned mission, where we're dealing with new complexities and speeds and powers that man has never used before. And we had hoped to push this day back forever, but that was not to be, and we all, I guess, intuitively knew that. So it's a day we don't want to repeat, that's for sure.
Senator, what effect does this have on a space program or any sort of flight test program when something like this happens?
This is Ohio Senator John Glenn,
the
first man
things,
in space.
Of course, because there will be a very complete investigation. Our view of what happened this morning would be only speculation at this point, although the very slow motion pictures I saw on one of the channels a little while ago seem to show the first light coming out of one of the solid rocket cases. Whether that'll turn out to be the cause of the difficulty or not, I don't know. But I wouldn't think that this was, you know, what it'll do to the program or how much it'll be set back will be dependent on the investigation.
Was NASA trying to push too hard on this, Senator?
No, I don't think so. If there's one thing NASA has not done all the way through, it is take a chance on cutting corners. And we've grown accustomed to success. And it's been an amazingly successful program so far. You know, I remember one of the TV commentators, I won't say which network, but one morning talking about when there was a delay, commenting, when are we going to get this turkey into an eagle? Well, we'd become so accustomed to getting these things off on time that safety was obviously being, at least in that commentator's mind, was being given short shrift. Why aren't we running these things like a regular airline schedule? Well, the fact that NASA has not done that. They run it with the idea of safety first and foremost, and that's been the way it's been operated ever since the days when I was in that program many years ago. And it's a tribute to them that they have not been goaded under pressure to taking any chances. And we'll just have to wait the accident analysis to see what happened in this case.
Senator, were you watching the
We're listening to Ohio Senator John Glenn, the first man in space in the Mercury program.
One of my staff people brought a note in to me about this, and then I left immediately and went up to my office.
What was your reaction, particularly to the replays you've probably seen?
Oh, my reaction was a profound sense of loss, I guess, that this day had finally come that we'd hoped would never arrive. In some ways, I guess it's, in our human existence, let me be philosophical for a moment. I guess in our human existence, there is triumph and there is tragedy. And man tries many things. And we advance as a whole human race because we succeed most of the time. We make advances, whether it's in space or engineering or health or medical things. Sometimes, though, we aren't perfect. And then there's a tragedy that brings us back to our own human frailties and our lack of perfection. And so that's the kind of a day we're faced with now. It's been an amazingly successful series of triumphs through the years. But it also is fraught with the possibility of tragedy, and that's what we came up against today.
Ohio Senator John Glenn, who was the first man to fly in orbit around the Earth in the Mercury program, he himself had a close call when a rocket package broke loose and it appeared it might not work. Without it, he would have been trapped in orbit, but of course he succeeded and came back to be the hero of space. Oregon Senator Bob Packwood today, when told the news, said every so often in the history of the world, great people give their lives to help the rest of us. That's what those in space shuttle have done today. We're all in their debt forever. Chris Glenn is at the Cape. There is a rescue operation still in progress. And Chris, is there anything new on that?
Not on the rescue operation itself. As a matter of fact, when we were speaking with George Diller a few minutes ago of NASA, he said it's so agonizing waiting for reports to come back from that impact area, and that they have seen very little. They've seen some pieces of debris in the water, but they can't really tell what part of the rocket assembly or the orbiter that was. Now, there have been some slow motion reruns of the camera view of the explosion, and apparently the huge external fuel tank, the main source of propellant and thrust that pushes the shuttle into orbit and then falls away into the Atlantic and is spent, when it's spent, that ruptured nearly 50,000 gallons of volatile fuel aboard, it looked very much like it just tore Challenger into very, very many pieces.
Chris, can I break in for a moment? We've had word from Washington now that President Reagan's State of the Union speech, which had been scheduled for tonight, has been canceled. The announcement was made by House Republican leader Robert Michael. A few moments ago, we talked with Gary Schuster, who said the president had planned to go ahead with it. He felt the business of government would go forward, and of course he would refer to it in his speech. But now apparently, upon consultation with members of the Congress, who are very much involved in this event, the State of the Union a message for this evening has been canceled. House Republican leader, Robert Michael, made that announcement a few moments ago. President Reagan, a moment ago, was asked by a group of network correspondents about the shuttle program. He told them, "I'm sure there will be no more flights until the cause of the explosion is determined and any problems are solved." And Chris, let's go back and pick up where we left off for a moment before we go to Europe. We'll talk in a moment with Dan Revive, who is in Bonn, talking to the European Space Agency, but I didn't want to cut you off. I know you had some more information.
No, I understand, Mitchell, of course. But I was saying the slow-motion reruns of the explosion of the shuttle Challenger showed that the big external fuel tank did rupture, and when it did so, it just tore the much smaller orbiter into a lot of pieces, and NASA has said since that fine pieces of the debris continued to fall into the impact area out in the Atlantic for about 45 minutes after it happened. We had mentioned that George Diller of NASA was here, and he was describing to us after he left our air here a few minutes ago what happens now, and he said that they intend to treat it just like an airplane crash investigation. They will try to recover as much of the debris as they can, both from the surface and from the bottom of the sea. They will bring everything back here to the Cape, or at least in the area. They will have a special hangar, and they will lay all this debris out. And then from inspection of the debris and piecing together the telemetry and the other data that they gathered while the flight was in progress, they'll try to figure out just exactly what did happen. We have with us now a longtime colleague, Spencer Allen, who is in the area locally and has covered space activities for CBS News for many, many years. And Spencer, you've been talking with a youngster from New Hampshire.
Yes, it was Brian Ballard. He's a 16-year-old senior from Concord High School, and he's also editor of the Crimson, the school newspaper. He was still in shock when I talked to him. He had difficulty in expressing himself, but I asked him if he planned to file any stories for his newspaper today. What kind of stories have you filed today?
Well, actually, I was planning on writing several big stories on the entire event. The paper is doesn't come out every day. It's only a quarterly paper. So I was planning on writing a final article, big article, and I wasn't really expecting this to happen, so I'm going to have to change my entire scope, my entire view of things as what happened here.
When's the last time you saw Krista McAuliffe?
Last time I saw her was, it's been a while. I saw her last October at a teacher's conference. So it's been a while since I've seen her in person.
Gentlemen, this is Mitchell Krause in New York. I'm sorry to break in again. I wanted to repeat for those who might be concerned about the schedule for this evening that the White House has now canceled President Reagan's State of the Union address, which had been scheduled for 9 p.m. Eastern Time. There's no word on when it will be rescheduled. The announcement was made by the House of Representatives, by Robert Michael, the majority leader. Another bit of information, the irony of this day, Monday, just yesterday, was the 19th anniversary of the death of the Air Force Lieutenant Virgil Grissom, Edward Higgins White, and Roger Chaffee. They were on the Apollo 1 capsule when it exploded on the launch pad. We have a man who has followed the space program with us over the years in Bonn, West Germany, and he is talking with European Space Agency officials in the West German capital. Dan Revive, I wonder, Dan, if you could tell us what reaction we've had over there.
Well, Mitch, they're a little bit hesitant to give the kind of reaction that, well, you'd fear to hear, to be quite frank. The European Space Agency, with its control center at Darmstadt, West Germany, uses a rocket called the Ariane. It's a joint project of the Western European countries. And they use it, launching it from South America, and it's been successful. It has launched several satellites in space, and they've always underlined the fact that it is unmanned and therefore safe. Safer than the shuttle, as well as being more efficient in the past. That's a point they're not pushing tonight. The officials we were able to reach did not want to make any lengthy comment beside describing their shock and, of course, condolences.
Put you, Dan Revive, on hold. We're going to Washington for White House spokesman Larry Speaks.
L. The President, in consultation with the leadership of Congress, has decided to postpone the State of the Union address that was scheduled for this evening. He will address the Congress and the American people on next Tuesday. The President, in addition, has asked the Vice President to go immediately to Cape Canaveral's Kennedy Space Center, along with the acting NASA Director, Bill Graham. The Vice President will carry with him the President's personal concern for those courageous Americans who were aboard the space shuttle. In addition, the President will speak to the American people from the Oval Office later this evening regarding this tragedy. The President, since learning of the tragedy shortly before noon, has conferred with Don Regan, who in turn consulted with Speaker Tip O'Neill and Senate Majority Leader Bob Dole. They concurred in the President's decision to delay his State of the Union. A few moments ago, the President met in the Oval Office with NASA Director Graham and instructed him to fly to the Cape with the Vice President to begin an effort to find out the cause of this tragedy. And then, the President said, to go forward with the nation's space program. The President said, and I quote, "These people were dedicated to the exploration of space. We could do no more to honor them, these courageous Americans, than to go forward with the program."
Can you tell us some of the reasoning in the decision to postpone, since, as you know, the President's first reaction was to go ahead with tonight's speech?
This is White House spokesman Larry Speaks.
The President, like all Americans, has seen this tragedy unfold on television and has felt keenly what those family members must have felt watching that shuttle go into the air at the Cape, first pride and then second horror. the president feels that these same emotions are being experienced by people all over this nation at this moment. And with the consultation of Congress that's taken place in the last hour or so, the president thought it was entirely appropriate that his State of the Union be deferred until and let him address the American people on what's happening here tonight.
Did Administrator Graham tell him finally what happened? Does he have information, confirmation?
No. The NASA has issued a statement indicating simply that there was an explosion aboard the space shuttle shortly after it lifted off from the Cape this morning, and that a search and rescue mission is underway. That is continuing at this hour and will continue until all efforts to find out what the situation in there are exhausted.
Does the president believe...
Right.
Great. Well, Larry, is the president also going to cancel his State of the Union activities for the balance of the weekend? What time is the other mark?
The president will... will, for the balance of the week, continue on his previously announced schedule, with the exception of those activities which were designed as a follow-up to the State of the Union. They will be rescheduled for next week. The time of the address to the nation has not been determined, pending definite word from NASA about the situation.
DHS, Treasury, and...
White House spokesman Larry Speaks announcing to the nation and to the Washington White House press corps that the State of the Union message by President Reagan, originally scheduled for tonight at 9, has now been canceled. It's been postponed until next Tuesday night. However, Mr. Reagan will address the nation from the Oval Office. The time of that statement has not yet been determined, according to Mr. Speaks. Earlier